Today's episode is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful diamond ring, launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueNile.com. This exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, welcome, welcome in, everybody, to another week here on the Locked On Vikings podcast. Hope you all enjoyed my personal Christmas, which is the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And today, I kind of want to respond to some of the events of the playoffs a little bit. There's a lot of stuff going on around the league, and some of it is a little bit relevant to the Vikings, so I think there's a couple discussions that have been spurred. And really, what I'm driving at here is what you saw in the title, which is, let's talk a little bit about Stephon Diggs. And now that we kind of have the 2020 season in our rear view and we can address it in hindsight, I think we can kind of look back at that whole story and see if we want to update our take at all with the benefit of hindsight. Obviously, it's really difficult every time you go and you watch Stephon Diggs get this big long touchdown or make this awesome play in a Buffalo Bills uniform. It's really difficult to look at it and say, man, that could have been for us. We could be in the playoffs right now beating up a team as the 2 seed and going on to the NFC Championship. What if that was us? What if we kept Diggs? And it's easy to kind of get lost in that seller's remorse a little bit, where we missed the guy and we want him back and all this stuff. But I think we should maybe take a look back now that we're a little bit removed from it all and other details have come out and pieces have been published and stuff. And I think we can kind of recap what really happened with the Stephon Diggs situation in Minnesota and really try to get a good sense for why Stephon Diggs was so upset, how the Vikings handled it, and kind of the decisions they made and the decisions that were or were not made for them. So let's talk about it. We also have Mock Draft Monday coming up later in the show. So if you're just here for some mock draft stuff, fret not, because that is coming up later in the show as well. But here's the best version of the story, the best kind of curation and compilation of all the details and stuff that have come out over time that I can give you. And I'm sorry if I get anything wrong here. This is the best that I can get because a lot of it has to come piecemeal from a lot of different places. But basically, Stephon Diggs was upset, right? And he was upset because he wasn't getting enough targets. He wanted more volume. That's all been very well discussed. And there are two main reasons that he wasn't getting the ball enough. One, the Vikings just didn't have a big enough, robust enough passing offense to satisfy what he wanted. And, you know, the reasons for that, obviously, a lot of it had to do with game script, but a lot of it just had to do with, like, this schematic decision that they were making that I think we can criticize as part of a different conversation. And we talked about that plenty at the time. But also because Kirk Cousins would miss him deep a whole bunch of the time. That was what kind of spurred that week 4 outburst that where he missed practice and that whole thing, because he was open deep the whole game and Kirk Cousins never threw to him. So he was really upset that played its role as well. And speculatively, I would guess that Stephon Diggs was upset about this situation well before the 2019 week 4 thing where it really kind of came to a head. I would guess that Diggs was pretty upset. I would even guess that it goes back to 2018 with Kirk Cousins first coming to the Vikings and during that season as well. But that's just a guess. Either way, that week 4 thing happens. The Vikings go into Soldier Field. He's open the whole game. Kirk Cousins never finds him. A lot of that has to do with pressure. That was a really bad O-line game. A lot of it was just Kirk Cousins not seeing down the field. It was a terrible Cousins game. And Diggs gets really upset. He misses the Wednesday practice the following week. It becomes a whole thing. You know, he does that press conference in the locker room where he says there's truth to all the trade rumors. And at that point, you know, the dirty laundry's out in the air, right? And I think what happens there is, of course, there are trade rumors, right? So Diggs, it sounds like, and if you listen to that press conference, what I gather is he goes to Spielman and Zimmer and et cetera, and says, I want to be traded. And they go, well, you're under contract. So if there's a good deal, then sure, but you know, we're not going to break our own backs over it. And that's kind of where that conversation ends, however it goes. And so it sounds like there were some calls that were made and some discussions that happened with other teams. I don't know who those other teams were, but ultimately nothing gets done, and Diggs plays out the rest of the season. At the end of the season, the Vikings extend Kirk Cousins again, and Stefon Diggs tweets. Now, Stefon Diggs always tweets. He's tweeted weird stuff since the moment he got in Minnesota. So for me, for 4 years, Stefon Diggs tweeting was never really that big of an indicator. But if you were somebody like, say, the Buffalo Bills that weren't intimately familiar with Stefon Diggs' social media feed, then you might look at a tweet like it's time for a new beginning and think that that is him genuinely demanding a trade. Like it's the moment, like what the Texans are dealing with Deshaun Watson right now, where it is over, it's done, there's no way he's playing another snap in Minnesota. So the Buffalo Bills go call up Rick Spielman and the Vikings and say, here's a trade package and let's talk about it. And they come to a deal for a first round pick, a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth, and they get Stefon Diggs and a seventh round pick. Now on that same day, and this is very important, there's a lot of Houston comparisons to be made, because the idea of a player, a superstar player, getting super disgruntled and forcing their way out of an organization is, we'll go with topical. So in Houston, the same thing happens with DeAndre Hopkins. He had been mad in that organization for a long time. The brass of that organization, namely Jack Easterby, the weird pastor, and of course Bill O'Brien and owner Cal McNair, they all have their tension and their friction, and eventually it comes to a head and Deshaun Watson kind of forces the Texans into a trade, and they trade Deshaun Watson, or they trade DeAndre Hopkins for a second round pick and David Johnson, running back, over to Arizona. And that deal kind of happens, like, I think it was the same day, wasn't it? Or like back to back, really. So that's the story, the best that I can tell. Some of that is insider stuff that's been reported over time. Some of that was kind of what we knew at the time. But really, what I gather from that is that the Vikings approached this as such, and I'm going to speculate a lot here, but I would be surprised if I was very far off. At some point, Stefon Diggs let the Vikings know, hey, I want to be traded. I'm not demanding a trade. I'll still play, but know that I would like to be traded and I don't want to be in this organization that won't target me enough anymore. And I think to a lot of people, that is the point at which the Vikings have lost this transaction. And I don't think that those people are very far off base at all, right? The suggestion to pass more to Stefon Diggs is a pretty good suggestion on its merits. And so this isn't necessarily a they should listen to their superstar player because he's good enough to demand whatever he wants. This is a case where the man has a damn point, and maybe listening to him would have been the best decision, not only to pacify him, although that probably shouldn't that shouldn't like dictate your roster and like strategic moves, but because it is a good strategic move and he had a good idea. It is not unlike Deshaun Watson telling the Texans they should interview Eric Bieniemy. And if the Texans don't, not only is that a bad idea on merit, but like you had somebody very important who's screaming at you to do it, makes it even less excusable. So I definitely get that. I don't think I feel as passionately as those people, but I certainly wouldn't tell them that they're wrong. So now you kind of had this situation where you have this disgruntled player, and a disgruntled player is not necessarily a death knell, right? A disgruntled player does not need to be traded. Theoretically, you could manage a disgruntled player, if not by doing the thing he wants you to do, by saying, well, go out there and play. NFL players give 110%, and I don't think you would ever look at any of those 2019 games after the week four kerfuffle where you would ever say Stefon Diggs was dogging anything or playing at some lesser level because he didn't like the organization. No, he gave 110% and he had a phenomenal year in 2019. So in lieu of just pacifying your disgruntled player by doing what that player is asking you to do, what should a team do with a disgruntled player? How does a team kind of maximize their return on having a disgruntled player in the locker room? So we're going to talk about that and continue this conversation in just a moment. But first, listen, I'm going to level with y'all. The pandemic has not been great for all of our fitness goals, and if you want to get back on the saddle and reach those fitness goals, maybe a New Year's resolution or something, Echelon can get you there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their Echelon Stride Smart Treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of home. The EX7S is Echelon's latest state-of-the-art innovation that takes cycling to the next level. The EX7S connected bike is built with performance, flexibility, and durability in mind, and it's the bike for any competitors at heart. Their world-class instructors will motivate you with thousands of daily live and on-demand studio-level classes, always available when you need them. And unlike their competitors, Echelon is affordable for everyone. One membership lets up to five family members all work out, even at the same time. So right now, you can try Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days. Go to echelonfit.com/lockedon. That's echelonfit.com/lockedon. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get your podcasts. So let's continue on here. And the question that I kind of posed was, what do you do with a disgruntled player if you don't want to do what that player says? And sometimes you should take that advice, but in lieu of that, what's kind of the plan? What's the way to handle this? And I guess there are two options. One, you get rid of him. Two, you try to work with it, right? And I think the Vikings felt that they could work with it for as long as they had to. Because if they didn't, I think this would have gone down a little bit differently, right? I think if Diggs said, hey, I want to be traded, and the Vikings learned that Diggs is disgruntled, I don't think they would have played out the entire season with him or taken that all the way to the trade deadline. I think they probably would have taken one of those deals that was talked about after that whole kerfuffle in week 4 of 2019. It seems to me more that they bided their time, that they waited until a deal came that they liked. And they wouldn't have been able to do that if they didn't feel like they could manage Stefon Diggs and get him to play even though he was disgruntled. And there is a certain point where what does it matter if the player is upset if he's still giving you a lot of production and you know still contributing as much as he always does to winning games and he's upset? It's like, outside of the like interpersonal be a decent human reason to not want the guy to be upset, from a pure football angle, if it's not actually producing any meaningful change, then we can just kind of ride this, right? And I think they understood that they couldn't do that indefinitely, right? And eventually they would have to get rid of him. But I think the difference between the way that they approached this and the way that the Texans approached their situation is that the Vikings showed a little bit more patience. And they were able to turn down other deals. When you turn down trade deals, the NFL now knows that you're turning down trade deals. So when the whole thing crops up again during the "It's time for a new beginning" tweet, teams are coming to the table knowing that you aren't desperate to get rid of him. And I think that's why Stefon Diggs went for more than DeAndre Hopkins did, even though you would probably call those players on a similar level. And I think before this season, you probably would call those players, you probably would have said DeAndre Hopkins is better than Stefon Diggs. I think in 2018 and 2019, very few people would have disagreed with that, and yet Stefon Diggs returned such a bigger haul because I think the Vikings navigated that situation a little bit better. Again, not superior to listening to the players' very good advice, and Diggs just like had a point, they probably should have listened to that, and that's probably the best idea. But in terms of navigating it and finding a way to maximize your value, that patience did pay off. Now, what did the Vikings get here is kind of the next question. Did they get enough at all? And I guess here's a thought experiment for you. If Diggs was not disgruntled, if he was just as happy as any player in any locker room and it was totally fine and we never thought about this, and the Vikings had made that trade, what would you think about it? Really think, like, honestly, like, what would you think about the Vikings trading Stefon Diggs for a first, a fourth in the next season, and then a fifth and a sixth, and then you give away a seventh as well? Like, what would you think about that value? And I think I tried to do that when I initially came up with a take, and I don't think I'm moving off that take. My take at the time, and it's the one I still believe in, is the Vikings assumed a lot of risk by turning Stefon Diggs, a proven sure asset, into a bunch of dice rolls, right? A bunch of unsure assets. And a first round pick is like a very valuable thing that, you know, is worth quite a lot, but at the end of the day, it's a dice roll. You could have Justin Jefferson, you could have Jalen Reagor, and a lot of that has to do with making guesses about stuff you can't really discern, like how a college player will translate to the NFL. The draft is hard, man, and that means that draft picks have a chance of not being worth much. So if you think about all of these draft picks as the range of outcomes that they represent, and add up all of those possible outcomes, my opinion was that there were more outcomes that come from all of those picks that do not add up to the sum of Stefon Diggs, then there are outcomes that do add up to the Vikings having more than Stefon Diggs. Now, the Vikings landed in one of those better scenarios. I just don't think the chances of that were greater than 50%. And I'm really happy with what Justin Jefferson has done. And I think if you jumped over into a dimension where the Buffalo Bills didn't make this trade and they drafted Justin Jefferson at pick 22 and then offered Stefon Diggs for Justin Jefferson and all those picks, I don't think the Bills take that deal. And I think that that means that in true hindsight fashion, with all the benefit of hindsight possible, the Vikings are probably going to come out a little bit ahead on this trade. Not that the Bills are really going to have any regrets or anything, and everybody kind of agrees that it's a win-win if things worked out. But like, I guess where I would wrap this all out is you wouldn't repeat the process, right? Say there's another, let's say Danielle Hunter gets really disgruntled, right? And he wants way more money and the Vikings don't want to pay it. And he goes, nah, screw you guys, trade me. I want to be traded. I would definitely not support trading Danielle Hunter for a first round pick and change, and then hoping that that first round pick turns into just as good of an edge rusher as Danielle Hunter is, like, I don't want to take that risk again. And the fact that it worked out this time doesn't mean that that's going to be good process that you would repeat if a situation like this arises again. And I guess that's kind of where I'll leave that whole thing off. Now, one final addendum to all of this: when Stephon Diggs does well in Buffalo, we don't always need to, like, woe is me about it. Like, we all knew he was a good asset, and the Vikings didn't trade him because they were wrong about how good of an asset he was. They traded him because of a situation that was mismanaged, maybe not as mismanaged as the Texans thing, but still was like a mismanaged, like, interpersonal situation. And that, like, we all understand that, right? So it's not like David Ortiz and the Minnesota Twins, right, where he goes and plays really great with the Boston Red Sox, and we're sitting there going, like, why'd we get rid of this guy, right? I think we can all agree that it's fine that Stephon Diggs is doing well in Buffalo, and that what the Vikings got in return, the whole point is that it's supposed to replace that production. And because Justin Jefferson worked out so well, we can all ease our souls about that a little bit and just, like, hope that the former Viking that gave us a lot of good memories continues to do well in the league. I don't think that's much of a stretch. And honestly, if watching Stephon Diggs brings you displeasure, I think it would be really healthy to reassess what exactly you're looking for in watching a sport like football. But that's a much more psychoanalytic conversation than I think is appropriate for me to have here on this show. Instead, let's talk a little bit about the best tasting protein bar out there on the market. It's Built Bar. Comes in 18 amazing flavors. I got a variety pack in my fridge right now. Comes in stuff like cherry Barcia, peanut butter, the banana bread one, which I'm saving for last because it's the best one, and all sorts of other stuff that you don't think you should be able to indulge on if you're trying to lose or maintain weight. It is a chocolatey, lovely treat, but it's low calorie and it's low sugar. It's high in protein. It's high in fiber, and it's even keto friendly. So if you want to get some Built Bar for yourself, you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code Locked On. You get 20% off of your next order. That's promo code Locked On for 20% off at builtbar.com. I also want to talk to you about Grambling. How'd you guys do in the divisional round of your bets? If you guys were the type to make some wagers, let me know. Send me at Luke Braun NFL, at Locked On Vikings. Let me know how your bets went. I'm curious. If you are interested in getting into some gambling, there is only one place that has you covered and one place that we all trust. That's betonline.ag. You can sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use a promo code Locked On. You get a 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code Locked On to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Speaking of Twitter, tomorrow is Twitter Tuesday. So if you have questions about the Vikings offseason, the Vikings moves coming up, the Vikings 2020 season, anything at all, send me your questions at Luke Braun NFL or at Locked On Vikings, and I'll answer them on the show tomorrow. So make sure you come back and stick around for that. But now let's shift gears into mock draft mode. It is Mock Draft Monday. So if you are new to Mock Draft Monday, I've done a couple. You might want to go listen to the ones from last week to get caught up. But here's the way that this works on this show right now. Right now, we're not doing any trades. We're just keeping it simple for now. We are going to do three rounds this time instead of just the one, but we're only going to go up to three. We're not doing full seven yet or anything like that. And the other thing is I can't pick anybody that I've picked in a previous Mock Draft Monday. So that was Gregory Rousseau, the edge out of Miami, and Devonta Smith actually fell to us the week before the championship game. So those two are off limits, and anybody else is fair game. So I've got a mock draft sim in front of me, and the people available, the people that keep being available at this pick 14 are offensive tackles. Now, I don't love the redundancy that an offensive tackle creates. I think that redundancy is easy enough to solve, so I think it's, like, justifiable. You get rid of Riley Reiff, somebody plays guard, like, you're all right. But I don't love necessarily using a first round pick on something that creates a redundancy, but these offensive tackles are always staring me right in the face. And right now, in this particular simulation, we are choosing, if we want an offensive tackle, between Rashawn Slater and Christian Darrisaw. So I think we can have that conversation, and this is a good reason to go into it. There are other people available that are kind of interesting. Rashad Bateman, the Gopher, J.C. Horn, the corner out of South Carolina. Trey Lance is actually here, but again, I think I'm going to hold on to that card until a later mock draft, though I would definitely support a pick like a Trey Lance, you know, going after this draft's Jordan Love, if you will. But I'm between two offensive linemen here. One is Rashawn Slater from Northwestern. The other is Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech. And I guess the skinny on these guys, we'll talk about them probably a little bit more as we get closer to the draft, but the skinny on these guys for me is that what everybody says about Rashawn Slater is that he can kind of play whatever position in whatever scheme. And I think there is a lot of value to that, especially for a team that's maybe trying to switch its scheme up or something like that. But for the Vikings, that means you can put him at guard. You can have Cleveland play tackle. You can have Brandon O'Neal play the other tackle. You've got Oli Udo as a swing backup, and you've got Rashawn Slater somewhere along the interior. That is like a configuration that works for me. And it seems like he is good enough. He's got pass protection, which I think is a very important thing for the Vikings to look to bolster specifically, rather than just going and getting another like tight end convert that gets bowled over every play. So he has that pass protection that I think the Vikings should be looking for. And if there are other fluctuations later, Rashawn Slater can be kind of moved around the line with less cost than it would be for somebody like Ezra Cleveland, who never played another position, and you moved him over to right guard, and you saw a lot of like classic tackle at guard problems, which I've written about and I talked about sometime last week if you're interested in that conversation. Christian Darrisaw, on the other hand, is very much more a scheme fit zone run left tackle. That would be like, this is your left tackle and you put him there and you do something else with Cleveland or something like that. So it creates a little bit more of that redundancy, and there's a little bit more of a power concern. It's not a dismal power concern. It's not like the power concerns we had about Pat Elflein or Garrett Bradbury coming out or anything like that, but it is kind of a concern, and I think it's a little bit of a sore spot. So we're going to go with Rashawn Slater in the first and draft him, and then because we're not doing any trades, usually I think I would try to trade into the second round, but we're not doing that this time. So let's see what comes up in the third round. I've never done a third round mock before, so I don't know any of these players around, so let's see how this goes. So sitting at pick 78, the top of the board, at least on the Draft Network predictive board, which is what I'm kind of using as a guide right now, is Richie Grant, a safety out of UCF. Now, we love our Central Florida defensive backs here, don't we? But the thing that jumps out to me in just a cursory look at him is that he is versatile. He's scheme versatile. He's coverage versatile. That's huge for Mike Zimmer, who doesn't like to be the kind of defensive coach that runs the same coverage shell every year. He kind of had to do that with cover two this year, and you could tell he hated it. But he doesn't want to be like Pete Carroll, that's like cover three, cover three, cover three all the time, and let's just get players that are only specialized to be good at cover three and run the best cover three ever. No, he wants to be able to run, you know, cover one with a man, like man-to-man everywhere coverage. He wants to be able to run quarters. He wants to be able to run like cover three cloud and some weird, like he wants to be able to mix it up a lot. And Richie Grant seems to be the kind of ranging free safety that is scheme versatile, doesn't have physical limitations, that can hold his own in the box, but excels in coverage in, you know, single high looks and stuff like that. The Vikings and Zimmer want to be able to use single high looks without sacrificing too much coverage because it helps in run defense, which the Vikings sorely missed this year, especially in games like the one against the Saints, the one against the Colts, the one against the Cowboys, where the run defense kind of defined why the Vikings lost those games. I really like Richie Grant as a fit, and especially getting what you could kind of surmise to be a one-for-one Anthony Harris replacement, assuming he's good. I mean, if he's available in the third round, I'm sure there's more deficiencies that I'm not driving at, but as a one-for-one Anthony Harris replacement in the third round, that seems pretty good. Now, at pick 91, there's a lot of edge rushers, so let's continue to kind of bolster this defense and help out some of the defensive things that sunk the Vikings, and there's a name I'm very curious about. I don't know if I would pick him, but he's so interesting, I want to talk about him, and I'm going to pick him for that reason. It's Joe Tryon, an edge, I guess, quote-unquote edge out of Washington. Now, he to me reads a lot like an Anthony Barr type player. He's this crazy explosive athlete, very explosive off the edge. He probably shouldn't be a like hand in the dirt defensive end like you would have Danielle Hunter be, unless you're going to have him put on weight. He played at 250 in college, which is about what Anthony Barr is. And basically, here's the plan with him. Either you can have him put on a little weight and try to be a defensive end, although I don't think that's ideal, or teach him the Anthony Barr role and see if he can't get cheaper at that Anthony Barr role. There is, it's a rare thing to find an Anthony Barr. He is not a common type of athlete, the kind of person who can sim pressure, be a threat on that pressure, but also get back into coverage. is rare, and maybe Joe Tryon is the kind of guy that can accomplish that role as well. And either he just becomes a one-for-one replacement for Barr if things work out and you can get cheaper at the position, or you put them on the field next to each other, line one of them up as a defensive end, or line them all up on the line of scrimmage, or do all kinds of creative things, and you wouldn't have exactly an orthodox personnel, but you don't really want an orthodox personnel that everybody has seen all the time. So I think he projects out very well to be a 3-4 outside linebacker. That's what people said about Barr coming out of the draft, and I think the Vikings definitely have a role for that kind of player in their 4-3 that doesn't necessarily exist in other defenses, and finding more players to fill that unique role, I think, is a wise thing to go try and do, especially with a third round pick. There are other guys, Victor Dimukeji from Duke, there's Ronnie Perkins from Oklahoma, who are available at this point that I think I would probably consider more just because it's a little more orthodox, but I'm very curious about Joe Tryon. But now that we've talked about him, I'm actually going to take a different edge rusher in this particular exercise. I'm going to go with Patrick Jones, the edge out of Pittsburgh. He is a true blue 4-3 defensive end. He is your Everson Griffin replacement. He's your rotate out with a Fadi Odenebo guy who will put his hand in the dirt and be an edge rusher every single time. He needs he's a good run defender. He is gap sound. He might need a little bit of development when it comes to his repertoire of pass rushing moves, but that is exactly the kind of guy you want to give to Andre Patterson. So I am going to take Patrick Jones and not get too complicated about this, though I am fascinated with Joe Tryon out of Washington. So that is my 3-round mock draft. These are going to get real fun when we add the fourth round, where there's a whole bunch of fourth round picks that the Vikings have. But for now, we are going to focus on Twitter Tuesday for tomorrow. So make sure you get your questions in at Luke Braun NFL or at Locked On Vikings. That's where you can find me. And as always, Skol.